I'm going to say it. This might be my favorite guest interview of season 7 of the Branding Business School podcast. Nadine and I's conversation is going to have you feeling so inspired and refreshed about implementing some realistic wellness habits into your life as a busy woman or a busy mom or a busy entrepreneur. Nadine is an award-winning author and a holistic writing coach who helps women develop and publish their stories. Her latest book, Come Home to Your Heart, is an essay collection and guided journal that helps readers fall back in love with themselves. She has been featured in Cosmo, Authority, MindBody Green, Here, Urban Wellness, Chicago Magazine, and more. And Nadine is also the podcast host of Heart of the Story, where she shares interviews with today's leading women writers and wellness experts. Pulling from her vast experience as a writing, meditation, and yoga nidra instructor, Nadine leads women's workshops and retreats online and around the U.S. She is really an incredible woman. She gets real vulnerable and shares her story of going through a really traumatic event in her 20s that then informed what would become her first published memoir. I mean, this woman just has been through so much and lives on to not only tell the story, but to impact so many women's lives because of it, mine included. So without further ado, here's my interview with Nadine Kenny Johnstone.
This is the Branding Business School podcast, the go-to business and marketing podcast for ambitious women looking to start and scale profitable businesses. Learn from your host, Victoria Marcoulier, how to build a powerhouse brand in this online era without sacrificing your sanity or misplacing your priorities. We support the dreamers and the disruptors and are showing up weekly to teach you practical advice on what it takes to become the go-to in your industry. Operating an online business as a female entrepreneur looks different these days, and thanks to us, so does business school. Welcome to the Branding Business School podcast.
Nadine, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. So as someone who really your whole life is dedicated to helping other women tell their stories, why don't you just start by sharing your own story with us? Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how it led you to becoming a writer?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in Chicago around really, really hardworking, strong women. My grandmother stayed at home, raised four kids, and then my mom for a little while was a single mom and then was working full time after she got remarried. And what I saw was that these really powerful women in my life didn't really have time to be creative and pursue their hobbies. And I think somewhere deep within me, though I didn't know it as a child, I was yearning that when I grew up, I wanted to have the time and space and ability to pursue things that really fired me up in creative ways. And so when I was young, I was a total book nerd and spent so much time at the library. And and yet when I was going to college, I didn't think of writing as a practical thing. So somewhere along the lines, that fire of creativity kind of like dimmed, and I was trying to go for something practical. And I went to study nutrition in college, and I subsequently almost flunked out and got on academic probation. Wow. And as soon as I changed my major to English and literature, it was like the world clicked again. And from then on, it's been everything writing related. So I went to grad school for creative writing and to learn how to teach creative writing. Then I became a professor for almost 15 years. And then I was coaching women writers on the side. I was publishing my own essays. Two of my books got published, and I was basically trying to help women save time, money, and energy by teaching them how to write their books and get them out in the world without all the headaches I went through myself. And I launched Write Well, my business, 4 years ago, full-time with all of the coaching that I had been doing on the side for over a decade. So here I am now, and I lead writing and wellness workshops and retreats for women.
And I love the name Write Well. Obviously, I've actually gotten to work with a couple of businesses with comparable names to Brandwell. And obviously, yeah. I just feel like we're kindreds because of that. But your story is really fascinating to me. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was the memoir of This Much I'm Sure, was that your first work to get published?
Yeah. So I had published little, I shouldn't say little, but I had published essays and stories before then. And I really was trying to write fiction. And then life happened. Mm-hmm. And even though I'd been working on a novel, when my husband and I went through infertility, it was the only thing I could write about. And so I subsequently ended up writing my memoir of This Much I'm Sure, which was my first book out in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So this memoir that we're talking about, you can buy it on Amazon, on Nadine's website, but this is a deeply personal and emotional story. When I heard about your story, I was just so moved, you know, as a mom and one with babies at that. But would you be willing to talk a little bit about your memoir and what it was like to revisit some of the events and emotions that you talk about in that book?
Yeah, yeah. So we knew from my husband's medical history, he's a cancer survivor, that our fertility chances would be compromised compared to maybe some other couples. And so pretty much almost as soon as we started trying for a family after getting married, we started seeking out IVF help. And there were many, many things that happened along the way, but one of the hardest was that after a very routine procedure, which is called an egg retrieval procedure, my left ovary didn't clot as it was supposed to. I was hyperstimulated and I had deep, severe internal bleeding, ended up in the ER, and then needed life-saving surgery. And it was horrific for many reasons, but as they were wheeling me into surgery, they said, all we see is a mass of blood from the ultrasound. We don't know what's going on. We need your permission. We may have to give you a hysterectomy. We have to do whatever we need to do to save your life. And I was 28. And had no children. And the thought of needing a hysterectomy was horrible. And yet there, I was losing blood by the moment. I was like barely conscious. And it was just like, it's go time. They need to save my life. And so when I woke up from that surgery, I didn't know what reproductive organs I still had. I didn't know what had happened. So it was a very trying time in our lives. Luckily, they were able to keep and save my organs. And by some random miracle, we ended up conceiving our son a year later without IVF intervention. Yeah. Right? And yet it was a very rough road. And I also, I don't know, I almost hesitate sometimes talking about the fact that we ended up getting pregnant naturally, because for women who are going through infertility, when they hear those stories, they're like, I don't want to hear anymore. Like, don't tell me about your miracle. Right. Don't tell me about your miracle moment here. Mm-hmm. And it's just, infertility is such a difficult path and road, because in many areas of our life, we can work toward and get whatever it is that we want, education, profession, we can save up to buy something we desperately want. But with the baby, there is no guarantee. And that is the hardest thing to live with. So I wrote about all of that in my memoir.
Wow. Yeah, that story, every time I hear it, my eyes just fill with tears. I can't even imagine, as a 28-year-old, that's actually how old I was when I had my firstborn. And I just can't imagine going in for what seemingly these days feels like a routine treatment, an egg retrieval. A lot of women are now, you know, resorting to IVF, and that just going a totally different direction than what you ever would have imagined, and all of those emotions that you had to deal with. So my question to you is, you said at the time you were writing fiction, that was kind of the direction you were going, and then life happened. You know, this just took over. Was it therapeutic for you to write about those events and to kind of share that journey with the world?
It was more that I went to a writing retreat in the midst of all this when right after that happened, and we couldn't try another treatment for a while. My body had to recover. So I made a kind of spontaneous decision to go on a writing retreat to Guatemala. I had never done anything like that before. And while I was there, still writing fiction, the leader, the host, had heard about my personal story. And she said, "Can you write about those babies?" Meaning the ones that I dreamed up in my mind. And I was like devastated at first, just even thinking about this imaginary family I had. And then I just one day on that retreat, I was like, all right, I'm going to start writing about this. And then when I got home, I wrote and it flew out of me and was hard, but felt cleansing. And I ended up shaping that into an essay that got published in a magazine that, unlike a lot of my other work out in the world, got a lot of traction and interest. And that's when I realized, oh, maybe there's something here and maybe I'm not so alone. So it was almost less of writing therapeutically, but as I kept writing after that, I just kept thinking, there's got to be somebody else who feels the way that I feel, because if I'm getting this unexpected response from this one essay about how desperately I want to be a parent and can't, then I'm not alone. So I kept writing it. And the beauty of what happens when you write is that, yes, at first we always write for ourselves. But then as we revise and craft and draft again and again, it becomes this thing outside of our bodies that is no longer this bleeding wound, and it becomes something that we make meaning out of, that we can look at from a more objective perspective. We can, it's not so traumatizing anymore, and eventually it becomes a thing, a story on a page that we kind of, we put out in the world, and we can be at peace with it outside of us and hopefully helping other people. So it goes from being therapeutic to being a connecting point. And while I was terrified of having all our personal bits one click away on Amazon, my husband and I got such resounding feedback from strangers across the world who thanked us for sharing our story, that it was so worth it. And I've, since that memoir came out in 2017, so 7 years ago, I since still get regular, I would say a few times, or like every few months, get regular emails for someone who read my article about what happened to me with IVF. And then I get emails that say, because I read the article before I went in for my procedure, then when I came out of it and I was having these symptoms, I knew that they weren't right. And I called my doctor and they realized that I had internal bleeding. Mm-hmm. So it's like women are emailing to say this, and I'm going, oh my God, who knew that sharing my story could possibly help people realize that they're experiencing a side effect or an unwanted part of this procedure.
Wow. So Nadine, at what point did you start to use your own skills as an author? Now you had been through this experience of, getting your essays published and then actually getting a book published. At what point did you decide to become a writing coach and start teaching others?
Yeah. So I started teaching in 2007 and into 2008, started teaching at universities. And so all the while from then on, I was presenting at writing conferences and things like that. And then in roughly maybe 2015, I was at a writing conference. They would have these one-on-one sessions where writers could meet with a presenter, a teacher, and give them part of their manuscript, and that teacher could give feedback, and then you have a one-on-one meeting at the conference. So I, as a presenter, had signed up to do some one-on-one sessions, and this woman, Dee Dee, had given part of her manuscript to me ahead of time via email, and we met at the conference for our one-on-one, and she was in her 80s, and she said to me, I love the way that you give feedback. It feels very different from the other kinds of classes and sessions that I've had. I want to write a memoir, and I have limited time, for real. I have limited time. And so can you work with me as a coach to get my story out in the world? And I was like, oh my gosh, this felt like a life mission, a legacy that she wanted to leave behind. And I said, of course. And so we worked diligently. Every month she would send a chapter to me, and her published memoir came out, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago. And ever since Dee Dee asked me to be her coach, and I heeded the call, so to speak, then I started coaching other women. So since 2015, so 9 years, almost 10 years, I've been coaching women, and it's morphed into my entire business and world, all because Dee Dee asked me to.
It only takes one. Yeah. You know, I'm sure I've shared this story on the podcast before, but I always had a dream of owning my own business. But, you know, like most people who have entrepreneurship in their blood, you just try your hand at a lot of different things and see what sticks. And I was working full time at a web design agency, and my husband came home one day and was like, hey, my buddy needs a website. You think you could design it for him? And so lo and behold, I designed for one dude. And then I ended up with this all female, woman owned, woman run web design.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, okay, Nadine, this podcast focuses a lot on helping women discover their differentiators and then empowering them to use those differentiators to stand out in crowded markets. And I still remember so vividly the call that you and I had before you began working with Brandwell. This was like a couple of years ago, but you told me about your love of wellness, your love of yoga, how you were a yoga instructor, and how you had kind of figured out a way to marry what you were doing with your writing students with this wellness component. And I was so inspired by how unique your business was. It was something I had never heard of. So did you always plan to merge these two rather separate passions together when you first started out as a writing coach, or did that come later?
Yeah, it came later that I purposefully merged the two. And I want to say that what I love about Brandwell is that you all help highlight the differentiator rather than make it something to kind of hide or have in secret. Because imagine this, right? I was a professor for almost 15 years, and the academic world is very, very different from the meditation, journaling, wellness world. And so I was actually doing a lot of this on the sly. So when we would get professional development funds from our chair to use for an academic writing conference, I would send in my proposal, and I'd be like, well, I want to go to this conference that's about writing. And it was like a journaling and silent meditation retreat. And so I just kept following my interests, which was always to seek out a different set of tools. And that started because when I was in grad school at Columbia College in Chicago, I am so lucky that I just stumbled into that program because they do writing completely differently. We would go into class with a notebook, no laptops allowed, and we would do visualization exercises for like an hour. And then we would write longhand in our notebook. So it was a very almost spiritually minded way of developing your stories. And I just am lucky that that was the MFA training that I got, because I've heard other programs are very different from that. You just bring in your pages, people tear them apart. It's very cutthroat. And that set the foundation. And then I followed my natural curiosities of meditation and journaling. I've been a lifelong journaler. And finally, when I went to one of my idol writers, Natalie Goldberg's Sit, Walk, Write retreat. It was all about sitting in meditation, doing walking meditation, having silent time for almost the whole week, and writing. I realized by her model that I could do both, that I could teach writing, but also incorporate other wellness tools within the practice. And so I came back to my university and I started just leading my classes with meditation before we would get into writing. And my students, you know, these are students in Chicago. They're in the heart of a city. They're like, what is this woo-woo stuff? And they loved it. They would be like, Professor Jay, can we do that again? Those were the times that I realized that I could blend both, and it was actually a deep asset. So I just kept doing it more and more and more, and stopped trying to kind of hide it as this thing on the side, but part of who I am and how I teach. And then I just fully embraced it when I left being a professor and started Write Well. It was a very clear distinction. I'm going to do both. And I'm going to do both outwardly and integrated.
And you became a certified yoga instructor as well, correct?
Yeah, it's yoga nidra. And this is an important distinction, because yoga nidra is essentially like a lying down meditation to relax the nervous system. So people think they're going to be doing poses, and no, it's a very yin practice. And so it's very meditative, and you slowly relax each part of your body to the point where you're in that dreamy state just before you fall asleep, and you get all the benefits of rest because your nervous system is not having to do all the tasks that it typically does, and it gets to just focus on rest and repair. So it's deeply restorative and rejuvenating and restful. And I got that certification because it was the only thing when I was a young mom that could help me get the rest I needed when I certainly wasn't getting enough sleep at night and was just haggard and frazzled every moment of the day.
So. Hello, raising my hand here. Yeah, as you're,
I don't know anyone who might feel like that.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I might have a little too much yang in my life with my two toddlers, all the coffee I'm drinking, and running Brandwell, you know, an all-female team with a lot of estrogen. But I love, even just talking to you, Nadine, you have such a calming presence about you. And, you know, I'm actually not much of a journaler, I'll be honest here. But I have friends that they can't even go to bed until they spend time writing in their journal. And it's such a therapeutic thing for them in like closing out their day and kind of like wrapping up their thoughts and putting them on paper. So I wanted to talk to you, somebody who's really dedicated your whole life to this whole aspect of writing and how it impacts wellness. How do you think that writing can contribute to your overall wellness and mental health?
Yeah. Well, of course, journaling is hard for so many people because they feel like they have to do it, quote unquote, right. When they open up a journal, they have the blank page staring back at them, shaming them. And so, of course, it feels like yet another thing that I need to do, that I'm supposed to do for my wellness. And as busy working moms, it's like the last thing we need is one more thing to do. So I view it oppositely as an asset, where my journal is my companion. My journal is my emotional confidant. The journal is where I tell myself the truth, truths that I can't even say to my most beloved people, but I want to acknowledge within myself. The journal is where I am self-compassionate when I've made a mistake. The journal is where I even tap into how I'm feeling at any given moment. Mm-hmm. I took a beautiful workshop with a woman named Renee Trudeau, and she says that self-care is tuning in moment to moment to your needs. And the three questions that she likes to pose are, how do I feel what do I need and what do I want? So how do I feel? What do I need and what do I want? Those three questions alone, they might take you 30 seconds to answer in a journal or even in your head, but those three questions help you know what's even going on in yourself. Because I always say with the journal, we're thinking about following our hearts and what is our purpose and what is our mission here, and kind of following what we're supposed to do at the soul level. But how do we even know what that is if we don't give ourselves a chance to listen to it? And we can't all sit in silence and just hear direction. You know, that doesn't come easily for all of us. And so for many, the journal is a place where we can acknowledge it, hear it, write it down. So I find the journal like a multifaceted tool that can lead to many different things: self-compassion, truth-telling, tuning in to how we actually feel, being a mode of self-care, being a place of clarity. Like, my gosh, how cluttered are our brains? Yeah. Sometimes I just need to dump out all the mental clutter, and the journal is a great ground for that.
Instead of just dissociating and hopping on social media and filling our minds with other people's lives, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Although if we're doing it, it's because we have a void. Of course we do, because we have barely a moment in our days to even breathe. So it's like that, what is it called? It's like a rebellious, like, this is me time. So yes. I'm to scroll. So it's a totally normal and understandable thing. But the key question is, like, how do you feel after? I always feel kind of yuck after I do like a doom scroll or a comparison scroll. Yeah. I never feel yuck after a journal session. And so that's what I say to people who are like, I'm curious about journaling. I always say I've never, ever regretted a journaling session, but I've always regretted any other number of numbing tools that I've used instead.
Yeah. So my question, let me just like paint the picture of my day-to-day life right now, and then we can use this as hopefully a greater example for other people who can relate to my season of life. But I am 31-year-old mom to two toddlers, and I have a growing business, a team of 10, married, just moved into a home. And I do feel like every moment of my day is spent, pouring into somebody. Obviously, that's part of what you're signing up for with motherhood. And I love my children and I will pour into them until the day that I die. But, when I'm not pouring into my kids, I'm pouring into my team or my clients or my podcast or my husband, And so I think there's this disconnect sometimes, especially for entrepreneurs and particularly working mompreneurs, where journaling just feels like a luxury, or we do get, like you just said, that last moment of the day after your kids are finally asleep and your emails have finally been responded to. And you're like, okay, this is my me time, rather than, for me, maybe this would change if I actually got into a more consistent rhythm of it. But like journaling feels like another chore of like, okay, now this is something I would need to do. And therefore I just don't do it, because I'm like, I'm just going to do something very passive, not active. Mm-hmm. But how do you not let your business run your life? Like, how can you realistically prioritize wellness as an entrepreneur, or maybe even insert the word mom there? Because even if you don't have your own business, like, just women in general, I think, carry a lot on their plates, and it's hard to prioritize wellness.
Yeah. I mean, listen to the list you just gave, right? Like, it is bananas. It is absolutely bananas what we are juggling on any given day. And it's hard because as entrepreneurs, we love what we do. So we don't want to do less of that. We love our children. We don't want to give them less. We love our partners. We don't want to give them less. So who or what suffers? Sadly, we do. And it's like the listeners and you and I don't need anyone else telling us that we should be doing yet one more thing. No, actually. And that's what I would say, like, okay, should we journal? Is it a great tool? Yes, like any number of things, just like water and good food and meditation. But here's what I say instead. I had a friend who's a therapist, and we were in a mastermind, and she said, often when busy women come into my office, I don't tell them to do a thing more. I tell them to make meaning out of what they're already doing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, mic drop. Yeah, really. You know, it's like, it's not about the adding yet another thing. It's the relishing in the moment of what we're already doing and seeing that it is sacred. So it's like not a rush scarf down a meal. It's a, oh, let me just taste this bite for a minute. Like rather than, oh, I got to get through this, you know, pretending to play Barbies with my daughter so I could go answer that email. It's like, can this be just a sacred moment right here? So that's first off. I think about this, gosh, daily. How can I just make meaning out of this moment rather than, oh, I have to do another thing? And then for me, I like to think about containers. So if I am anywhere within arm's reach of a phone or a laptop or a laundry bin, I'm going to be doing work. But if I can be in a container where those distractions are eliminated, I can be the most present, loving person. And so what I have found is that there are literally physical containers where I can be present with my people and with myself. So for example, the trampoline is my son and I, our container. That is where we go to be with each other. We bounce together on the trampoline and I'm all his and he is all mine. And I'm not looking at my email while nodding along, not really listening to his story, right? For my husband and I, it's we have a little table on our front porch. And on Sunday mornings, we sit out there and we have breakfast and we say, what's on your head? What's on your heart? And we have sometimes deep, deep conversations, but we're on the porch. My phone is in the house. We have like this bubble container. And for me, most afternoons at around 3:30 or 4, I have a little nest chair. It's like a little hanging chair that looks out at the trees. And I try to do 15 minutes in the nest chair. Sometimes it's meditating. Almost always it's a quick journal because that's what I love, but it's my nest chair. I'm in a bubble. In order to get into and out of it, there's a bit of effort. Like I have to climb into it. I don't take my phone when I'm in there. I get myself in a little cross-legged cocoon and it's my container. And so for me, that is what has worked to protect my time and my presence so that I can be fully there for this sacred moment. And one last thing is that at the end of the day, the thing that honestly has impacted me the most is that my father passed away in 2021 and he was 57 and he had worked his entire life, this man, and he was waiting to do all the things we're going to be during retirement. And he didn't get that. And so when I sit there and of course I could always answer another email, right? But I'm just like, I want to be here now. Like we have 7 years left with our son before he goes to college. Like I'm cognizant of that. We have seven spring breaks. And so while I could just do my business all day, every day, because I love it that much, but I love other things too. And so those things help me.
Something I picked up on as you were describing each of these containers, which this whole interview has been so fascinating to me. Like, you've shared so many good, tangible things, and I'm gleaning so much from this conversation. I know that our listeners will too. But as you were describing each of these containers, you referenced how my phone was in the house, my phone was in the other room, I didn't bring my phone. And it just has me thinking, I know this is true for me, but our phones are such disruptors of our peace and our wellness. And, you know, I think being able to detach from our phone, be it for 15 minutes, be it for an hour, it's almost the only way to really be present and like make meaning out of the moments, as you were saying, because, you know, I love playing up in the playroom with my daughters right now. But if my phone is there and I get a notification where, you know, somebody's like, hey, Victoria, somebody on my team, like, hey, Victoria, like, do you have a second where we can meet about this? It's really urgent. My mind is all of a sudden in a different room than the one that my daughters are in, you know? So like, I have to be intentional just as a mom with littles to recognize, like you said, I love my business. I could do this all day, but these years go by fast. Like my firstborn, who I still call her my little one because she's like a baby in my mind, she starts kindergarten next year. And that's 5 days a week out of the house. So this is really my last year enjoying these slow mornings and these kind of relaxed days, you know, relax as much as I just listed out that we're doing. But I want to be in the moment. Like I'm encouraged by you to do a better job of this. And I love what you said about, you know, somebody that's busy, not to give them more to do, but to just say, look at what you're already doing and try to make meaning out of it. I think that's just like such a beautiful takeaway. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about, I follow you on social media, of course, and I have seen you posting a lot about minimalism lately. And I am by no means a minimalist. My closet is full of clothes, but I do see the connection. So the more kids that I have, the more people that I hire, just like the more responsibility on my plate, the more I want to simplify like whatever I can. You know, I get in moods where I like go up in the playroom and I just like get rid of half of the stuff, you know, just go take it to Goodwill. Because I do see the connection of like having less and how it kind of frees up your mind. So what are your thoughts on minimalism as it relates to just clearing space for our minds to think and dream?
Yeah. I mean, I even think you and the team are doing this every time you work on a client's website. You know, you're looking at the way that a site looks clean and focused and gives that feeling is when there's purposeful content in purposeful places, not this cluttered mess of what do I look at? What do I look at? Right. So we know it with design. And our lives are the same way. And yet I also want to give the caveat that this is not yet another project for a busy woman to do. This is just a thinking about what gives you peace. And so this idea of minimalism came up in 2021. My family and I sold our home in Illinois, bought an Airstream camper and went on the road for 3 months. So 3 people, 2 dogs, and a betta fish in 27 feet.
Fish. Oh my gosh.
The most well-traveled fish. And so we each got a duffel bag's worth to bring with us of stuff and clothes. And we didn't even use all the stuff in there. I wore the same 5 outfits. And it is a very huge reminder of how little we actually need.
Yeah.
And then from there, we ended up moving to Florida into a furnished rental house at first. And our stuff, all of our furniture, all of our books and things was in storage for 18, 19 months. And we only brought with us into that house the things we needed. Like I brought my desk, my laptop. I have a walking desk, so the treadmill that goes under the desk, and like five books. And you know, like the bare bones basics. And we survived for 18 months. We thought it was going to be 3 months in this furnished rental. It was 18 months. Wow. And when the stuff, and we had purged before we had stored all of that stuff. And still, when the stuff came from Illinois here, I was like, what are we doing with all this stuff? Why do we have all this stuff? It was so overwhelming. And I purged yet further and further and further. So why do we do this and what can we do? Well, I really got into this even more this past year because I talked to the Millennial Minimalists. It's a great podcast, Kelly and Lauren. But it's not just about decluttering the things. It's about the mental clutter, the emotional clutter, the digital clutter, all of the things. And I think the simplest way to approach it for anyone who's listening is just thinking about what is one space you can clear. And I mean that both physically, mentally, emotionally. So for me, this is what it looks like. I used to just like sit on the couch at night after all this stuff was done and kind of numb out, zone out with my husband and he would have something on the TV. I'm not even really a TV person. I only ever wanted to be reading a book at that time, but I wanted to show that we were together. And what I craved was just silent reading time. And I was like, you know what's one space I can clear is that noise from my brain from the TV. So now I read in bed for 20 minutes during that time or a half hour. Yeah. And it's just like my nervous system is so much calmer in that moment.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do I need right now? Less noise. Just ask yourself that. What do I need less of right now in any given situation? And it's great.
Oh, I love that. I'm interested. That might be like a 2024 resolution thing. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I do feel that. And this is something that I talked about a lot in the Branding Business School course and just in other areas. But like when you free up your time, you free up your mind. And even though all of these things that I've listed out, you know, being a mom can't take a day off that, you know, being a business owner can't take a day off that. But there are other things that take up my time that maybe don't necessarily have to, where I could either simplify like all of the laundry. We could have less clothes, you know, we could just live on less, or all of the toys that I have to put away every single day. Like we could do a toy rotation, or we could just give some away and live with less. Like when you're able to take those tangible steps towards freeing up your time a little bit, it does give you this space and this creative energy almost. I'm sure you can relate to that. Like a huge thing for me, really the only reason that Brandwell exists and is what it is today, and certainly that the Branding Business School exists, is because I started hiring at an early age in my business. And I knew that if my time is always spent working within my business, I will never be able to dream up ideas for the future of my business or really move this thing forward. So that's been just a huge success for me, is, you know, hiring the right people to carry out my vision so that I can keep having the vision. So all of this, as we wrap up, I want to talk about what is a workation, because this is your thing. And I just want to hear, like, what is a workation? Why do we need one? Tell me a little about that.
Yes. And just to give you credit, I was listening to one of your episodes towards the end of 2023, and you were talking about the leap you had taken this past year, last year, to really hire a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I had been on the fence about hiring a virtual assistant. And that podcast episode made me just go, you know, what am I even doing? Why am I arguing about this in my head? I need her. That's right. I needed her 4 years ago. And so I did. And it's been wonderful. So yes, hire and delegation. So a workation. A workation is where you go on a solo retreat to work. And okay. I know to some people, they're like, but to me, it's absolutely delightful, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I get to just concentrate all my hours on dreaming. It's about being, you know, working on the business rather than in the business.
Yeah.
So every January, I go away for about 4 to 5 days somewhere where I can drive to and be alone. And I usually go to a cute little town where I can like hang out at a coffee shop all day and, you know, do things in my journal, dreaming, and or on my laptop. But it's a trip to have that creative focus and not have all the decision fatigue of a typical day in a busy working mom's life. Like, no, I don't have to think about who's picking up the kids today. I don't have to think about dinner if you're the one who makes dinner. I don't have to think about this. And so when I go, you know, I have my out of office on my business. It's usually during a time when I'm not teaching workshops and things. So I'm not in my business. I'm not mom. I'm not wife for those 4 or 5 days. And mm-hmm. so I go somewhere to be with just me, but also to have like super focused, creative dreaming time so I can start to envision what's ahead and to get clarity on is what I'm currently doing in my business what I want to be doing? Is it what I want to continue doing? What have the highlights consistently of the last year been? What have the lowlights been? It's a time of reflection. It's a time of purposeful intention so that I'm not just bringing into the next year all the bad habits that I have from the previous, or I'm just in the same mundane groove. I get to really reflect, dream, plan, create. And I recommend it for any woman entrepreneur, for any entrepreneur. If money is a thing, it's like I've done these as one day events at just a coffee shop or a co-working space where it's just like, okay. And I say to all my people, my phone will be on do not disturb for the next 12 hours. I will not respond to a thing. So I'm not the emergency contact. I am out of business over here. Like, do not contact me. I'm not in charge of anything today. I need to focus. And so that has been the one of the most helpful things to really grow my business and expand and be innovative and not just do the same thing.
I honestly am like trying to look at my calendar thinking, where can I book one of these this year? This sounds like exactly what I need. I love the idea because at this stage, you know, when you do have such a large team, somebody always needs you for something. So a lot of my daily activities with Brandwell are really just being there for my team. But, and I have actually set some things in place where now I have 1 week out of the month where I don't let anyone book meetings with me. Obviously, if emergencies come up, you know, and I absolutely have to get pulled back in, that's fine. But otherwise, you know, I have a weekly standing meeting with both of my managers, and then I hop on an all team meeting usually once a week. But 1 week out of the month, I protect that. And that way too, if my family and I want to get away, or if I just need a week to be home with my girls, I have a little bit of that margin. This is something that's only been in place for a matter of months. And I'm excited about it. But the idea of a solo work retreat sounds heavenly. And I think I'm going to book one this year.
Yes. And you can tack it on to, like, for example, I'm presenting at the summit in April, Choice Media Summit. And I'm going to tack on a few days after the conference for another workation. So it's like I'm already out of state. You know, my family's kind of used to, for those few days, me being gone. I'm already in another place, so I'm not dealing with all the home stuff. And so why not just stay at the hotel for a few days longer or book an Airbnb somewhere in that town and just have this solo time? So you can add it on to a work trip that's already in place.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm probably heading up to New York again this summer for a Squarespace retreat, and I may end up doing it there. So I love that idea. Okay, well, Nadine, this has been a fantastic interview. I have just learned so much. I'm so grateful that you've come on and shared the vulnerable parts of your story and just how you've really created this incredibly beautiful business, Rightwell, and how you approach wellness in such a unique way. And you really do make it feel realistic. Like, with all the things I listed out that make my life feel so busy, I'm coming away from this feeling like, okay, I can do some things to slow down and to get that creativity back. So I am curious, are you currently working on anything yourself? Like, can readers expect any more from you in the future?
Yes. So my guided journal, Come Home to Your Heart, came out a few months ago.
Yes. And that's up on your website.
Yes, yes, yes. And it feels like such a really rewarding thing for me because it's half essays, half journaling prompts, and it's 28 chapters. So you could do one at each one, like as a mini retreat. You take 10 minutes, you read a little essay of mine, and then I have journal prompts to guide you. So that's great, especially for people who want to journal, but they're like, I need some guidance here. And you can do any chapter at random, or you can do them for 28 days straight to build a habit. So basically 4 weeks of journaling. And I feel really, really proud of that. So I've been working on just, you know, sharing that with the world and talking about it on podcasts and in magazines and whatnot. Good Grit just featured an excerpt of it. And so did Onsite Journal. So I'm kind of like relishing in the excitement of when a writer has something that they've worked on in private for years, finally out in the world. It's like, hey guys, this is what I've been doing solo for years.
The process is so long. I mean, we get to work with a lot of authors at Brandwell and, you know, building out their online presence. And, you know, we often start working with them when they're still in like the manuscript phase. And it's like a year before they actually launch their book or even their pre-sale. And it's always, you know, we're so excited for them. So you should relish in the moment, Nadine. We know how much you put into everything that you create. And we will link in the show notes for everyone your manuscript, your memoir. We will link your memoir for everyone in the show notes, as well as links to social media, links to your website, so they can go and connect with you and learn more about your writing retreats.
Yes. And Heart of the Story, my podcast, where I talk about all these things, workation. I interview amazing women writers about what happens when life doesn't go according to plan. So
more of this calming voice in your life. I've been listening to your podcast lately, and I just feel so calm when I listen to you talk. So thank you, Nadine, for coming on the show.
I love this. Thank you so, so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Business School podcast. If you're looking to take your business to the next level, subscribe to the podcast and we'll continue to cheer you on week after week by giving you practical advice on how to build your brand. For show notes or to learn more about what we covered in today's episode, head to thebrandingbusinessschool.com/podcast. And remember, you don't need an MBA to be the CEO